Welcome to the Employment Law and HR Podcast with your host, Allison Cauley.
Hello and welcome to episode number 51 of the Employment Law and HR Podcast. I'm your host, Allison Cauley. I'm a solicitor and employment law specialist, and I work at Real Employment Law Advice, providing advice for employers and employees on all aspects of employment law. Now, in today's episode of the podcast, I'm going to give you a bit of a focus on the national minimum wage. And the reason for this is because from the 1st of April, all employers will be required to pay the living wage, the new living wage, which is a new rate of minimum wage to employees who are aged 25 and over. And the new rate is going to be £7.20. So it's an increase of 50p per hour for those employees who are aged over 25. And so with that in mind, I thought it'd be useful to give a bit of an overview about the minimum wage and how you calculate it. So I'm going to get into this week's content. So the national minimum wage was introduced in the UK in 1999 by the National Minimum Wage Act. And since then, there has been further legislation in relation to the national minimum wage and national minimum wage regulations. And each year, there's an increase in the national minimum wage. And the minimum wage is payable for any workers who ordinarily work in the UK and who are over compulsory school age. And there are different pay rates depending on age. So currently, for anybody aged under 18, the minimum wage is £3.87. That's for someone who is over school age but under 18. Then from 18 to 20, it's £5.30. And then from 21 and over, it's currently £6.70. But as I say, from the 1st of April, there'll be a new band. So from 21 to 24, it will be £6.70. And 25 and over, it will be £7.20. And there is a rate for apprentices, which is lower depending on the type of apprenticeship, and that's £3.30 an hour. Now, with the introduction of the living wage, I've been advising my clients to have a review of how they're paying their staff and to ensure that they are compliant with the new amounts for the living wage. And the reason why many people have had to undertake a review is because in a lot of cases where staff are salaried and then they do set hours or variable hours, it's not always easy to know if they're actually being paid the minimum wage rate or what would be the new living wage rate. If you pay your staff an hourly rate, then that's fairly easy. You just increase it. And for those staff who are salaried, for instance, then it is advisable to undertake a review. So how do you work out exactly what you're paying your staff in relation to the national minimum wage? Well, the pay reference period is 1 month, and that's the period that you look at their pay, unless they're paid under shorter periods. So if you pay your staff weekly, then it would be weekly. So you look at what they've received in the pay reference period. So you look at how much they've actually received in that month, and it's gross pay. Okay, so you look at the gross pay amount that they've received in that month. And if they are paid by way of commission as well, but the commission, for instance, is paid later on, so they earn commission in 1 month, but then the commission is actually paid at the end of the following month, for instance, then you look at what they've earned in that period of the month, not necessarily what they've received. So for employees who have a straightforward, simple earnings, you look at their gross pay for the month. But for those who have commission as well, you look at exactly how much commission they would have earned in that month, even though it's not been paid, and add that to their gross pay for that month. And that gives you the pay that you have to look at. It's useful to note that since October 2009, employers can't include things like tips and service charges within the pay for the purposes of calculating the national minimum wage. So once you've got their pay period, you then have to look at their hours. And there are four types of workers' hours. And these are time work, salaried, output work, and unmeasured work. Now, I'll just go through each of those for you. Time work is where they're paid per hour. So they are paid per hour and they record their hours. In many cases, let's just think of an example of in a cafe or a restaurant. It's normal for waiting staff to be paid per hour and to be given a rota and then their hours to be recorded. So that's time work, and that's fairly easy to work out. You just look at the actual time that they're working, and this could include also time that they're on standby, when they're on call, if they're travelling for work, or if they're just doing a normal business. So normal working hours are included. Then you have those salaried staff. So the salaried staff who have basic hours, for instance, and they are given hours. So let's just say their hours are 30 hours a week in their contract and they're paid a salary. So that's how you work those out. So for those people who are what we call time work hours, then you would just look at exactly how many hours they've worked and you divide that by the pay period. So if they've worked 90 hours in a month, then you divide their pay that we've worked out before in their pay period, and you divide that by 90, and that gives you the hourly rate for the purposes of calculating if you're paying the national minimum wage or not. So for those staff who are salaried, who might not record their hours by way of a rota or by the time that they're actually working, then you look at what they're working over the course of a year. And so you take hours over the year and you divide it by 12, and that gives you the hours that you need to divide by the monthly pay period. Now, the reason you do this for those salaried staff is to cover the situation where you have staff who work annualised hours, for instance. In a lot of industries where you maybe have a busier period, let's just take the sort of seasonal tourist industries where you would have a really, really busy time, maybe from May to September, and then quieter for the winter. You have staff who are working many, many more hours in the summer than they do in the winter. Obviously, if you took their summer hours and divided that by their salary, then you would be more likely not to be paying the minimum wage for that period. So to ensure that there's no disparity there, you take the hours for the whole year and add them together and then divide them by 12 to get the average. Hopefully that will all work out that they're being paid the minimum wage over the course of the year. Then we've got output work, where people are paid according to their productivity, and that's known as piecework, or unmeasured work, which is where you can catch anything. I won't go into either of those because they are a bit more complicated and less likely to apply. But if you do think that that would apply to your staff, then you can always get in touch and I'd be happy to have a chat with you about the specific circumstances. And you can contact me by email. It's alison@realemploymentadvice.co.uk if you'd like to have a chat about that. Now, what's important when you're calculating the minimum wage is to consider situations where you have staff who maybe are on call, who are doing sleep-ins, for instance, or who are on standby time, because there have been a number of cases where the Employment Tribunal and courts have determined that actually sleeping at work, where the employee is required to be there, or being on call, can count towards the hours that you need to take into consideration for the purposes of the national minimum wage. It's important that you keep an eye on this because you don't want to find that you fall foul of it, for the reasons I'll explain shortly. That's how you would go about calculating the national minimum wage. And if you have done that calculation for your, let's just say, your salaried staff, and you find actually when it comes out of the wash, they're not being paid £7.20 an hour and they're over 25, then you'd need to have a look at adjusting your salary rates to ensure that you do meet the new living wage. Aside from your obligations to pay the national minimum wage, as an employer, you're also required by law to keep records of hours and of pay. And they have to be sufficient enough to ensure that you are aware, at least, that you're paying the national minimum wage and that can be identified. So it's no defence to say, well, we don't record hours, so I had no idea. You're actually required by law to keep those records. And the employee has the right to see those records. And if you fail to allow the employee to see those records within 14 days of a written request, then the employee can make a claim in the Employment Tribunal against you, and they could be awarded compensation of up to 80 times of the relevant national minimum wage. And then you're also required to make those records available for an enforcement officer who may also want to inspect them. And that could be somebody from HMRC. Now, it's HMRC's job to enforce the national minimum wage, and they do that in a number of ways. They may be prompted to inspect your records by a tip-off. So they might have a tip-off from somebody that you're not paying the national minimum wage. They might have a complaint from an employee. They may very well be targeting your industry. So they have specific target industries. And they do that by risk profiling. So they look at industries and businesses where it's more likely that people won't be paying the national minimum wage, and then they would just do some randomised checks. And what is important to note is that HMRC can inspect your records at any time, and they could investigate your business to ensure that you're paying the national minimum wage. So as I say, now is a really good time to do an audit of your record system and to ensure that you're actually are paying the national minimum wage, but also the new living wage, because that will be looked at as well post the 1st of April. If record keeping is something that you're struggling with your HR records, I do offer a HR software system which is available at a reasonable monthly cost, where you can keep all that information about hours and pay, and both you and your employees can have access to it as well. So if you are interested in that and you'd like to find out more, you can contact me. Again, it's Alison at realemploymentlawadvice.co.uk. Okay, you might be saying, Alison, you know what? I really understand about the national minimum wage. I understand about the living wage, but my business just can't afford it. We just can't afford to increase our pay for those staff to ensure that they are paid the national minimum wage or the new living wage. What are the risks? Well, in my opinion, the risks nowadays are fairly high. Aside from having enforcement by HMRC, they can issue notices, civil enforcement notices requiring you to pay the underpaid national minimum wage. They can add a penalty, so they can put an additional penalty on top. And the additional penalty has been set at 100% of the total underpayment of national minimum wage, with a minimum of 100 and a maximum of 20,000. So if you think about what you could be underpaying, and then you add that to the penalty on top, and it can be fairly costly for you in the future. In addition to civil enforcement and the financial penalties, it is also a criminal offence to willfully refuse or neglect to pay national minimum wage, to fail to keep the records, as I described, to keep false records, to provide false records of information, and to intentionally or obstruct or delay an enforcement officer. And also, it could be a criminal offence if you refuse to answer questions or provide the information requested. And although civil enforcement is most likely to be used in cases, there are a small number of times when HMRC will proceed with a criminal investigation and prosecute employers who fail to pay the national minimum wage. So you've got those risks. You've got those risks of not only the financial penalties, but also the possible criminal enforcement. And aside from those two punishments, what is happening now is a system of naming and shaming employers. And I think this is where the biggest risk to you, your business, lies. It's a huge impact on your reputation if you are not paying the national minimum wage or the national living wage, as it will be. And I think your consumers and customers will be voting with their feet a lot of the time, as we've seen with some of famous examples of companies who've been named and shamed for tax avoidance, for instance, the likes of Starbucks, or for treating their employees badly, like Sports Direct. They've come under huge amounts of pressure from their customers, and it can really affect the bottom line if you are one of those employers who's named and shamed. And as recently as the beginning of February, 90 more employers were named and shamed and listed on the Department for Business and Innovation and Skills website. And I've actually copied and pasted that list into the show notes for today, just to give you an example of exactly what information is available about those employers who aren't paying the national minimum wage, or who have been found not to be paying the national minimum wage. And you can find the show notes at my website, adviceforemployers.co.uk/podcast/51. And finally, I think one of the things that you should consider when you're making this decision about your pay for your staff is actually, what kind of staff do you want? What kind of staff do you need in your business? Because word does quickly spread if you don't treat your employees well. It spreads not only to your customers, as I was saying, but also in the community in which your business operates. And it can then become very hard to find staff, to find good quality staff who will actually work for you. Because ultimately, people want to work for decent employers who are going to take care of them. So to summarise, my advice is ensure that you're aware of what the national minimum wage is, what the new national living wage is. Check that you're keeping good records of your employees' pay and hours of work. And then just do a quick calculation using the information I provided at the beginning of the podcast, and which I'll put in the show notes as well, to ensure that you will be meeting the living wage for all of your staff, whether they're hourly paid or salaried. And if you're not, then consider how you're going to deal with that. Don't bury your head in the sand, because you could be one of those people who get a knock on the door from HMRC and then find yourself being named and shamed and featuring on websites and in the news about people who aren't paying their employees properly. If you would like more information or you'd like some help in dealing with this issue, then you can contact me. As I've said before, it's alison@realemploymentoradvice.co.uk. And I'll put more information in the show notes and on my website, which is adviceforemployers.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening. The next episode of the Employment Law and HR podcast will be available in 2 weeks. And as I've said before, if you've got any interesting information, content, or anything you want to share, please get in touch. I'd be happy to feature you. I hope you have a great week and look forward to speaking to you soon. Thanks again for listening. Just want to finalise by saying I wouldn't be a lawyer unless I had a legal disclaimer. So I must just say to you that the information in this podcast is for information only. It's general review and a general update. It's always necessary to get specific legal advice about your circumstances. So please don't rely on anything that you've heard in this podcast. But please do feel free to contact me if you'd like further information or specific advice.